Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Southern Farm and Garden, a beautiful handcrafted agricultural journal. Purchase a copy today at southernfarmandgarden.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. Kat Johnson kicked the season off with an episode about food and football, so now we're turning to one of my favorite sports, talking about cookbooks. We'll take a sneak peek at a few recipe breakthroughs that Rose Levy Barenbaum discovered while working on her 12th cookbook.
You know, so this was such a eureka thing. People ask me if I still keep learning. And yeah, just thinking about it and trying to find a better way. It happens.
And hear about the challenges of writing a book about alcohol from HRN host Souther Teague.
The history of drinking is very blurry. Because people were drinking and no one was taking notes.
Plus, we'll get all the expert dish about the most exciting cookbook titles heading to bookstores this fall.
Like jazz music, it's been a part of American cuisine for centuries.
Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts and be the first to know when the next episode drops.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Amanda Dell.
I'm Kimberly Chow. We're your co-hosts of Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair.
Food Book Fair is a biannual bi-coastal festival of writing about eating. Check out foodbookfair.com for all the latest updates and our Instagram at foodbookfair. We are thrilled to announce that we are back at the Green Market this fall with book signings every Saturday at 10 a.m. So again, check our website and our Instagram for all of the listings of the great authors that we're going to be hosting this fall. And we're, again, at the Union Square Green Market at 10 a.m. every Saturday.
But you can find us across all social platforms and on the internet at Food Book Fair, exactly as it sounds. And we're also back every Tuesday live from the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Heritage Radio Network studios as Recommended Reading live Tuesdays at 2. And today, Tuesday at 2, it's me, Amanda, and in the studio, we're very happy to have Cleopatra Zulli, the head,
head
of culinary from Black Palette, event production house and culinary collective all about and for the African diaspora. We're excited to have her come talk about what they do, what she's reading, watching, and listening to, and also a new media project that Black Palette is working on. So that in a little bit. First of all, Amanda, what are you reading, watching, and listening to? What's on your list? We've not been in the studio together for a little bit.
No, I feel like this is a big time reunion right now. Got excited. I'm excited. Yeah, I've had a pretty busy end of summer and fall. I will mention one book that I did read when I had a beautiful escape upstate without internet for several days.
Awesome.
It was by Ariel Levy, The Rules Do Not Apply. Mm. A really sad read, but really beautiful, and something that I would recommend because there's a great deal, I think, of individual takeaway. It's about empathizing with what happened with the character, even though you may not be having the exact same experience as this character. But again, truly heartbreakingly sad, but a glimmer of hope.
Yeah. Can you tell our listeners what it's about a little bit?
It is about a woman who then gets into a relationship with another woman, her partner, and they end up getting married. And it's in some ways about the ebbs and flows of a relationship in terms of just the normal things that many people in a relationship deal with. You know, how they're coming together as one, substance abuse problems, you know, personality conflicts, and then they really just suffer a tremendous loss, and kind of everything unravels. So again, sad, but I think relatable. I think there's something in that book that's relatable for everyone, and the writing is really. It's very descriptive, but it also really allows you to imagine yourself in the place with the author.
I've read a lot of her reporting in The New Yorker. She's in like a beautiful lyrical writer.
Yeah.
Her profile of the South African sprinter, Caster Semenya, is, I think, one of the examples of the athlete right. profile form.
Right.
Which so is amazing.
The book centers around that trip that she took to
South Africa.
To South Africa and the struggle that she had in order to do those interviews and then kind of what happens to her personally because of the trip.
Interesting. It's been on my list.
Yeah. I lent it to, shout out to our friend, Rebecca Pepler. I lent it to her and she brought it to Paris, but she said she'll bring it back.
Okay. I can support my favorite independent bookstore and get a copy.
True. Okay. Then the other thing that I have been watching was I am caught up on Insecure. I am really loving this third season. It's like my, I don't know if I smoke cigarettes. I don't know. It's like my Monday night cigarette. I usually don't watch it on Sunday nights. It's like my not guilty pleasure. There's nothing guilty about it. It's my pleasure to watch it on Mondays after work is usually when I catch up on it. The latest episode, I felt really delved deeper into the relationships between the female friends on the show. Also the male friends a little bit. And it was a pretty comprehensive episode. It touched on sexually transmitted diseases. It touched on like what happens when people break up, you know, right away, like what happens in the period right after they're broken up. But it really centered around one of the women's baby shower and kind of all of the emotions that came with that for the friends and everyone else kind of reconciling their own place in life with their friends and how they could still move forward and coexist and just kind of coming to terms with the fact that relationships change as we get older. So I thought it was particularly poignant and again really did a deeper dive into the female relationships amongst themselves. I enjoyed it.
It's I don't watch the show. I'm the only person I know who does not watch the show.
Okay, well, I just had a good conversation.
Lawrence is back.
Lawrence is way back.
I know all the things, even though they mean nothing to me yet, though. I'm a big fan of...
Not to get too deep into the objectification of anyone, but there is a lot of good eye candy on that show. Okay. I will say that all around. So
JLS started working out, right? Like
it's JLS?
Yeah.
Oh, JLS is... He's
been working out?
He puts time in. You can tell. Anyway, okay, if you ever watch it, we'll get to talk about it.
We'll
but I think Cleo's going to maybe weigh on it a little bit later. Okay. So what are you reading, watching, or listening to?
I'm having a little pleasant hangover from quote-unquote Asian August, kicked off by Crazy Rich Asians, which I saw with my parents the day it came out.
I loved your photo
lots of
that.
Eye candy.
Definitely.
Speaking of eye candy, it's just like this scene doesn't make sense that this like intense mother-son conversation would happen while he's like getting undressed and redressed by her. You know, and it was like, okay, cool.
I would love to devote eventually a whole show to talking with you about
Crazy Rich Asians. I mean, I think my feeling about Crazy Rich Asians, and this is like the TLDR version of all of the think pieces and tweets that I read, is that this is one story about Asians. It's not all Asian stories. And I'm hoping that this does represent one story of many that are hopefully going to be greenlit by the mainstream industrial entertainment system that we're in. But that to say, we can also have nice things. And it's also fun to watch like a frothy movie where the men are shirtless all the time. and there's like beautiful clothes and stuff. It was fun. I love Ken Jeong as Awkwafina's dad. the Go family is the highlight. But anyway, I've got a little Asian August hangover. So I reread Joy Luck Club. I was visiting my parents and I found a copy. It was my mom's. It even has like her, you know, when you have the free address stickers that, you know, ACLU or like PETA sends you, and it has like the little butterfly and then like Cecilia Chow, you know, address.
Did those fall out of fashion? I feel like those used to be a thing.
I think nonprofits are trying to cut their costs, so they don't send out free mailer stickers anymore. But it has her name on the back.
Aww,
so I was reading that, and I finished it as I was landing at JFK, the last chapter, like crying. I'm a big subway crier and also like a plane crier. I'm a Gemini, so I just like let it out. So it felt good to finish this book, rereading it, like checking in on what I thought of it before, my experience with it when I read it when I was younger, as I was coming back to New York when I'd been out of town for a little bit. And speaking of reevaluation, there's a really good Faria Rosine piece in Man Repeller from a few weeks ago where she says, we need to reevaluate Joy Luck Club. Because Joy Luck Club was first embraced by Asian Americans and then sort of rejected by Asian Americans as sort of typing us into the space where, for example, like Chinese authors had to talk about Chinese stuff. Like women had to talk about like mother-daughter relationships in fiction, in the movies, etc. And I think it really deserves a different look, a second look. And Faria is an incredible writer, and her writing, her piece in Man Repeller about this, I think is a recommended read from me for sure.
Hmm. We'll put it on my list.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, maybe we will invite Cleo to come on and talk a little bit about what she's reading, watching, or listening to. Then we'll take a short break and get into discussing more of her work.
Great.
So, Cleo, officially welcome to the microphone on this show, and welcome to our shipping container.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. In terms of what I'm currently reading, I'm in research mode, so I'm a little bit in this rereading phase. So just revisiting Hunger by Roxane Gay, really been invested in exploring what it means to really devote space around conversations around eating and feeding disorders, particularly in the Black communities. As a Haitian writer, as a Haitian writer, Roxane Gay definitely resonates with me. You know, as somebody who identifies as a Haitian American, and you know, as somebody who had an eating disorder as a young person, it's definitely really important for me to find texts where I can really explore that specific context around eating disorders, because I grew up really reading texts that revolved around kind of waif white girls and eating and feeding disorders. So revisiting Hunger. And also, I was gifted Blood, Bones, and Butter for my birthday in June. I, too, am a Gemini. And I read that in July, and I'm just revisiting that again. For me, again, conversations around family and the memories that meals invoke is really important for me, and our emotional memories is really important to me. So, you know, I really enjoyed that book, and I was like, okay, I need to dive deeper into it from a different angle. And on a lighter note, I really like graphic novels and I like comic books. One of the comic series that I really like that actually does revolve around food is a comic series called Chew by John Layman. And it's actually a graphic novel about an Asian FDA agent who is a SIBOpath. And so you SIBOpath is somebody who gets psychic impressions from eating things.
I have to read this.
So it's really great because it's all about him and all of those adventures in New York City and in urban centers from an FDA perspective. But it's really funny and kind of gross and gory and kind of existentialist for the character, because he's like, I want to just enjoy eating food, but every time I eat like a piece of chicken, it takes me back to the slaughterhouse, for example. But they also kind of use him for just gross things. Like I could eat a piece of human flesh and find out like how they died, for example.
I have to check that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's on a lighter note.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a graphic novel. Yeah, it's like, right. You know, it's all of that is with a lighter lens. It's not like, you know, true crime.
Is it C-H-E-W?
Say that again.
How's it? It's Chew. C-H-E-W.
C-H-E-W. Yeah, like, and so it's a graphic novel series. So there's a lot of different series. get one, read it on the train, you're okay. off, you're done, you read the next one.
Is the agent's name also Chu?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Yes.
It's funny.
So that's currently, I mean, that's like the daily kind of reading on the subway, really easy, really light. And just in terms of like journalism or media, I really appreciate Code Switch by NPR. Mm. And so I'm always reading that on a regular basis. And, you know, just love the pieces that they put out. I think the first time that I was familiar with Code Switch was in 2013 or 14. Mm-hmm. They had put out a piece about just the history of advertising towards the Black community in McDonald's, mm-hmm. From McDonald's. And so that was really fascinating for me. And so since I saw that piece, I was really committed to just seeing all of the content that NPR put out.
Yeah, they do really good work. Mm-hmm. And I also appreciate the combination of... the combination of text to audio as someone who prefers to read, but sometimes will listen to stories. And then also, the excerpted stuff. Cause I'm like, I can read this a lot faster and I would like to.
But yeah. NPR is really good for that. I mean,
thank you, public radio.
Love public radio. I mean, in terms of podcasting, one of my first favorite podcasts was This American Life. And so that kind of gave me the lens into the world of NPR and
the GOAT.
Multimedia platform.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we can't wait to talk about your multimedia platform, which is called Licorice. We're going to bring Cleo back and get into that and the rest of what Black Palette does to hold space, make space, take space after this break.
Yeah. So remember, Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported radio station that relies on your support to keep these airwaves hot. So definitely head over to heritageradionetwork.org, become a member, pledge what you can so that you can keep so that we can keep shows like Recommended Reading and the many other incredible shows that Heritage Radio Network hosts on a weekly basis. So heritageradionetwork.org, check it out and do what you can.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Southern Farm and Garden, a beautiful, handcrafted agricultural journal. Each issue features stories about food history, seasonal recipes, artisanal products, and the amazing people who bring it to your table. Packed with stunning photography, the content is fresh and educational. Southern Farm and Garden takes you behind the scenes to meet farmers, gardeners, wineries, chefs, and artists who are passionate about creating healthy, unique, and sustainable food and products that you can enjoy all year. Are you interested in eating healthier and learning more about where your food comes from and living a more connected life? Purchase a copy today at southernfarmandgarden.com. Foodtank.com named Southern Farm and Garden one of the top 20 magazines for people who eat, cook, and grow, praising it for connecting readers with the food, the farms, and the stories behind our food system. Subscribe today or find a retailer near you at southernfarmandgarden.com.
Ooh. Welcome back. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair on Heritage Radio Network. We are so excited to be in the studio today with Cleo Zuli. She is the founder of Black Palette. I will read a little bit of a description of what Black Palette is, and then we'll look forward to you telling us kind of also about it in other words as well, and talking about exactly what you do. So Black Palette is a culinary art collective event production house focused on decolonizing food culture and curating empowering dining experiences rooted in conversation, advocacy, mentorship, wellness, and community care. So that's a lot. That sounds super ambitious and amazing. So I can't wait to hear a little bit more about it and about you and how you got your start and kind of what brought you here. What got you here?
Yeah. Again, thanks for having me. I want to just go into the fact that very simply, we're just producing events. We're producing dining events, and our focus is really around creating a kind of dining experience that we wish we had and that we constantly were seeking and that we didn't have. And so for us, it's not really that ambitious. It's just a response to literally seeing things happen the same way in dining spaces and experiences, literally spending years as Black folks, as queer folks, for me, identifying as a gender non-conforming person, going to dining experiences, going to events, going to parties, living our lives, and constantly being like, I wish, I wish, I wish, I wish. And so for me, in my formal background as an educator for the past 14, 15 years, as somebody who is producing events professionally, and, my other aspects of my career, it was important for me to just say to myself, how long am I going to continue to say I wish? How long am I going to continue to ask myself, where are the spaces that I would want without just answering the question myself by creating those spaces? And for me, that is very much part of like my life philosophy. Most folks, even in the literary world who I admire, folks like Entezake Shange, Alice Walker, Audre Lorde, all speak back to that very same philosophy of, if you don't see something, create your own. If something is not there, make space for it to be there. And so Black Palette is really just moving forward in that tradition, and also comes out of me recreating dining experiences that I was brought up in growing up. I grew up raised by a young immigrant, and my mom was maybe like 20 when she had me. And my mom raised me with her sister and her brother, who are a little younger than her. And I grew up in all of these amazing dining parties. Like, they were having events all the time. And these events were really inclusive. And these were really amazing spaces that I maybe took for granted and didn't see value in it as a young person until I, like, fast forward, graduated, moved to New York, and then started to live my adult life and really sought something that I felt like was missing and didn't realize that, I actually grew up in those spaces, and that it was up to me to really recreate it. And so through a lot of the research that I had done, just in my own education, through African studies, education studies, women's studies, I had learned more about Madame C.J. Walker's daughter, Alayla Walker, who during the time of the Harlem Renaissance was really throwing these amazing parties and experiences in Harlem that were inclusive. And you had gay poets like Langston Hughes who were just showing up to these parties. And, it started to inspire me to ask myself questions about what that experience might have looked like around then, asking myself questions like what it might have been like for somebody like Langston Hughes in present day at the time to maybe seek space where he could feel at home, where he could have a social environment, where he saw other like-minded people embrace him at the time in Harlem, being a Black gay man. And what would it have looked like for him to walk into Alayla's space and feel at home? Mm. How powerful would that have been for him? And not the Langston Hughes that we're looking at today, who is no longer with us, who we look at as a late person who we admire. I'm talking about him living his life in the present moment, what would have meant for him to ask himself if he had any safe spaces to go to that really allowed him to not just be a Black man, but to be a Black gay man in all of his identities. And I wanted to recreate that space, for other people who are asking themselves that in 2018.
That's incredible. And I think what really struck me when I first started being introduced to your work and other folks putting you on, and seeing the first big event that y'all did at the beginning of this year, FED, this all-day gathering and brunch, and seeing all of the incredible photos of all the folks and people just having such an incredible time, is seeing also that this is a collective and that there's so much collaboration and trust built into what y'all do. Can you talk a little bit about how that came together and how you met and how you continue to meet folks that you work with and how you seek them out?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, Black Palette had been a thought for me personally, as something I wanted to put together for probably the past like 2 or 3 years. And mm-hmm. It wasn't until a year ago where a lot of my thinking and ideating and writing and all of that came mm-hmm. together, where I pulled in two folks to co-found it with me. Mm-hmm. And so my co-founders are Travis Young and Kendra Clark. And so, you know, those two relationships were not just friendships. Travis and I both come from an education background. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that is the space in which professionally we align. However, we met each other through mutual friends. Mm-hmm. And immediately upon meeting each other, you know, Travis, and you know, let me know about his culinary background. We realized food was a common thing that we had in common, and so we just started to cook together. Mm. And Kendra, I actually knew her from a space that I worked in for 5 years, and she was a mentor as part of an educational organization that I worked with. And she mm-hmm. also, I looked at her as a really amazing woman who actually did a lot of leadership work around like data strategy. But she did stuff with like Condé Nast and really didn't just like use data and analytics to just like push out numbers, but she used data and little analytics to talk about how do we fill gaps to respond to needs that essentially will benefit communities of color or marginalized communities. Mm-hmm. So I saw her work as something really interesting. I saw Travis's work and his like passion in food as something interesting. And I just started to talk to them about it. And the way Travis kind of describes it is that I just was annoying him. I wouldn't let it go. I kept being like, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing. This is what I want to do. And I really think you should be the person to do it with me. Mm-hmm. And I just bothered him for months until he finally, I presented him with an opportunity. You know, I got presented with a gig and I said, hey, this is the opportunity I think you should step into. And he took it. And then Kendra came in and, you know, pretty much moving forward, it was really important for us to see this is not just like, we're not doing like dinner parties or just brunches, you know, mm-hmm. like you explained, FED, which is our signature event, is an event where it is a curated wellness experience surrounded around dining. Mm-hmm. And so we don't just have people eating. We had performers, we had poets, we had musicians, we had yoga, and we integrate all this programming really intentionally. Mm-hmm. And all of that collaboration centers around us being community oriented. You know, there's no way that we could do what we have done in the last 9 months mm-hmm. without actually tapping into every single person who's kind of shown interest and kind of seeing where they could fit into what we're mm-hmm. doing, you know? Mm-hmm. So anybody who's like, I'm super into what you're doing, we connect with them and we try to talk to them about why they're interested in us and mm-hmm. how they see themselves particularly contributing to that. Mm-hmm. And so similar to me just rounding up Travis and Kendra, I've kind of moved forward organically in that way since the beginning. And there might have been a vision for what I thought it would be at the beginning, mm-hmm. and it's definitely changed because of being so open to collaborating mm-hmm. and developing things with other folks. You know, the vision shifts because yep. it's not just about what I saw at right. the beginning. Mm-hmm. It has now become about what everybody who is invested and interested in Black Palette, you know, hopes to see it become as well.
That's dope.
Yeah. In this collaboration and with your partners and co-founders, like, was there, as you talk about the vision kind of changing or maybe some things you didn't think about in the same way, was there something that particularly like surprised you or stuck out as something that you thought maybe something would really resonate with people, or you wanted to do something one way and you kind of thought about it in another way when collaborating with others?
Yeah. So, I mean, from a business background, I tend to use language around things like return on investment and return on energy, okay. Especially when you're doing people work or you're connecting with people. So return on energy is really important too. Burnout, all of that, like those things stay at the top of my mind. So, you know, I think about capacity first. And okay. at first, in terms of what we were trying to do, the capacity was really simple. It was like, we want to have this signature event because we want to curate this kind of dining experience that we are missing and we want to exist. So let's focus on that. And so that's where Fed came. And then we were doing it. And then folks were like, well, instead of just having your own events, like, would you be interested in collaborating on our events? Would you be interested in hosting our events? Would you be interested in cooking for us? And all of these other things. And so, you know, it was important for us to figure out like what actually made sense for us to do. But we've focused on, again, sticking to Fed and doing our own dining experiences, but also being able to cook and curate other events and dining experiences for other people. So it didn't start off as doing it for other people. It started off as just doing it for ourselves, and the interest led us, you know, led us there. And what's come out of it, I think, that's been really meaningful is like a newer partnership that we've had in as the event producers for Sudanese Kitchen. And that's been really meaningful for us because the response we've gotten has literally been from the Sudanese community directly saying things like, I've never been to a Sudanese event like this before. Or there literally are no Sudanese restaurants in which we can go to and have these kind of experiences. And this is the space. And so we're really excited to actually be like cultivating a new lane for a dining experience committed to East African cuisine, you know, that doesn't exist in New York. We're happy to be the people to lead in that field, and that's not what we thought at first it was going to be at all. We didn't think we would have, you know, a particular chef or African initiative say, can you be the ones to, like, do this with us and, like, put us on the map in New York City? And so that's been really affirming for us, and I don't know. We're open to seeing what happens, but we're focused on events, you know, and just making sure that the events are experiences. It's not just about showing up and eating and having a conversation, although conversation is very much part of it. It's about the curated elements within that, because programming and making sure that you can come and eat and do other things that allow you to feel like you're elevated and you leave the space intentionally is really important for us too.
I'm thinking of how you were talking, how you were describing Kendra's work, obviously, as using data to fill gaps. Well, in a way, that the work that you're doing together is using art, community, and culture to fill gaps, to fill what it is that you want, which is really incredible to see how that's growing through your vision as well as like the vision as it develops with the folks around you, which is really powerful.
In this age where like there's so much stuff online and people have virtual friendships, you know, all the time, and they may have never met up in real life, and so, you know, much of our world is online, and not only for, you know, people that are our age but much younger, it almost feels as if their lives are becoming increasingly more online. Why is it so important to hold events in real life where people can connect? Like, what did you view that as a challenge? Has it been challenging to get people there? Like, why do you feel as if holding events is important?
So, you know, as I mentioned a little earlier before, my background, I have a 14-year career in education and community organizing and events, and a lot of that is centered around social justice work. And so for me, no matter what I do, it's really important for myself to always ask, what is it that I can do for my community that hasn't been done before, right? And so through that question comes other sets of questions of, you know, who is this for? Who can access it? And, you know, when we talk about the internet, I think it's really important for us to understand that even though we do have people from really low economic income brackets lining up to buy iPhones, the digital divide is still real. There's still many, many people who don't have the internet at their, you know, at their fingertips or at their disposal. And it's really important for us to literally be able to touch communities, you know, literally be on the ground. I think for a younger generation, and my background does, you know, it is in education, I think there's the assumption that there's the desire to only connect virtually. And I know from being a teacher and from working with young people, and I just know through my community work that people desire to connect with others physically. They desire to mm-hmm. be touched. They desire to be hugged. They desire to be talked to. They desire to be inspired by just being in physical space with people. You know, that's the idea of the celebrity, you know, and the fan and all of that. Like, we know that people want people connection, you know, and I know that through my work. So it was really important for me not to create a platform that diverted me away from essentially the essence of what I've been doing for the past 15 years. So the lens is food, but it all derives from the work that I've been doing consistently.
And can you talk about how Licorice, your new food and lifestyle site, is going to connect to that and as a continuation of that?
Licorice is actually it's actually like my learning curve, and it's actually my response to doing what I know how to do so well, which are things on the ground and creating that community on the ground. And it's actually like my creative project and challenge to figure out how to create that space digitally. Right. And so while we've been able to cultivate something in the last 9 months on the ground, it's really important for us to ask ourselves, when people are not at Fed events or when they're not engaging in other events that we do, how do we allow the community that we're building a space and an opportunity to still feel connected to one another and have conversations virtually? So essentially, Licorice is this way of us trying to do what we're doing on the ground and put it in a virtual space. And for me, that's the arena that's newer for me. That's where like Kendra comes in. That's where other folks come in. You know, my work for the past 15 years has been about people on the ground and connecting. I'm not an internet person. I'm not good at social media. I'm actually super private. It's this whole Black Palette thing has been really a challenge for me. It's been about me like learning how to like put myself out there and like be on social media and like put things on my stories and stuff like that. Like, all of this stuff is brand new, and Licorice is this space where essentially we want to create a virtual lifestyle and food culture platform that looks a little different and feels a little different than other ones, right? We're not trying to create like a Goop or whatever. Like, we're trying to just do something differently. And there was no language that I had around that that felt really, for like what I envisioned, that felt really solid. But then I was watching Random Acts of Flyness, and I was like, you know what? I don't actually need to be able to describe what we want to do with Licorice very clearly, because you look at something like that where
I still can't describe
at its most basic core. You could say it's the format of the traditional American variety show at the most basic way, but that's not how you describe Random Acts of Flatness. You know, there's no, you can't really describe it, right? And so for us, our vision is something that we haven't quite been able to really describe, but we'll put it under the packaging of a food and lifestyle or a food culture and lifestyle website. But we hope that everything that we put on Licorice allows us to intentionally prompt conversation. Because again, when you come to a Fed event or anything that we do, it's about intentionally engaging around particular topics, around particular conversation, and we don't want that to be lost when folks go online.
Can you talk a little bit? Can you tell us a little bit of the timeline when folks can expect Licorice to launch? Anything else we should look out for so we can support it in different ways? And also a little preview, if you can, share.
Yeah. So Licorice, we're going to be launching it actually on Black Friday, so November 23rd, 2018.
Reclaiming Black Friday.
Exactly. You don't need to go out and shop. Just, you know, just go online and go to Licorice. But, you know, part of the Licorice content, like I said, is, you know, for us doing things a little differently, we've used this as a platform to really amplify Black innovators, too. And so we're using food as the lens to explore a lot of different topics that relate to the African diaspora. And we connect with particular individuals to help us use food as a lens to do that. So, you know, part of the content, we have a few different things. I don't know. We have a few different things happening, but we're going to be connecting, or we have already actually had footage, and we've connected with a chef and an urban forager. His name is Chef KPE, or Chris Edelin. And so for us, we are using the time and experience that we've had with him to talk about how are we honoring our ancestors through urban foraging. You know, we've also connected with these two artisans, fashion designers, Le Chanteur, Soul and Dynasty Ogun, who used watermelon seeds use watermelon iconography and historically racist iconography in their capsule collections. And through talking about the watermelon, everything from like the historical significance, you know, how it came from being a sub-Saharan African fruit to migrating to the United States to then becoming this thing used as like a derogatory symbol to the Black community. We talk about things like that, to really also what it means to really be a Black woman who is an artisan, who's self-taught. So they're both self-taught. They've met a lot of success, but it hasn't come without, you know, struggles. And so we explore a lot of different things in those conversations. We also connect with Sudanese Kitchen, and, you know, Sudanese Kitchen is really a platform. They're based in London and in Scotland. When they came to Brooklyn this past Labor Day, we had a really great event, and we shot a lot of really great content. And we did that with a Sudanese retropop singer named Alsada, who's part of a group, Alsada and the Nubatones. And we had a really great conversation around what it meant to embrace their holistic Sudanese identities, and also what it means to feel empowered through like their senses, through food and music, and find empowerment through those things. And so, you know, we've got other things there, but those are few of the folks who we've connected with and are going to be part of the content that's launching in November.
Okay, cool. That's awesome.
So it will be multimedia.
Yes, multimedia. Okay. So a combination of text, video, audio, photos. Yeah.
Can't wait to check that out. I mean, I feel like some of these folks I started following on Instagram because I saw them on the Black Palette feed. So exciting that y'all are taking a deeper dive with this and being able to explore it in a format that fits what it is that you want to do and that makes space and takes space in a food, quote unquote, food media world that doesn't necessarily have anything that looks like it.
Thank you. Definitely appreciate that. We'll see what comes. We'll definitely see what comes.
Yeah, excited. Very, very excited to see the launch and to hopefully attend some events in the future. What's up on your agenda for events? I know I saw you're also co-presenting a workshop. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of our events, we've got a few things coming up. So, you know, I really think it's important to continue our work outside of Fed in terms of creating spaces. And so we're moving forward with doing a food class. And so we're having a series of a food class happening at Earth Arts Center, which is a wellness center in Bedford-Stuyvesant called Black Meals and Meditations. And so that really is a hybrid food class. It's like part food demo class and part wellness experience. And so we're doing everything from doing affirmations and meditations around our memories and meals to having demos and conversations around particular recipes and food that relate back to the culinary history or culinary Black history, to having moments of really reflecting and diving deeper into the nuances of our relationships to food. So like I said earlier, you know, using Roxane Gay's Hunger as research, part of that ties back to content that could possibly be used in our classes to really explore some of these issues. We're also, I'm producing outside of Black Palette a wellness event with an organization called Colors of Om, with their writer Jenna Wortham, a yoga instructor Marissa Hall, and Black Palette will be doing a food class as part of that wellness event. So that's coming up in the fall. We have an event space where we have like a date TBD. So we're just going to figure that out. And then, and then Black Palette will be part of it as well.
Cool.
Rad.
And I think there's also a crowdfunding campaign coming up that hopefully our listeners can support. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a crowdfunding campaign that's going to be launching on Halloween on the 31st. And that's going to be a day after actually another event. We'll be part of the Just Food Gala. Yeah, woo-hoo! So we're excited about October and the fall and all good things to come. But you all can definitely check us out on Instagram or blackpalette.com. And on October 31st will be our crowdfunding campaign that's really going to allow us to move forward in a lot of really great directions that we want to move forward in. And so we are looking for and hope to have all of y'all support.
Everything coming up Black Palette for fall.
Yeah, yeah. You have it. Thank you so much for joining us today and just sharing all of the things that you're up to and getting out for people to get more information about Black Palette and Licorice and keep it on their horizon. I think for Instagram, if anyone wants to check out more information about Black Palette, it's at BLK Palette.
P-A-L-A-T-E.
Yes.
Yes. So definitely check out Cleo, check out Black Palette, and we will be anxiously waiting, I think, by our computers on the 23rd and refreshing for Licorice.
All right. I am so happy to be here. Again, thanks so much for inviting us.
Thank you for being
here. Cleo and I met online in the DMs talking about food media. And here we are meeting in person, and hopefully folks listening on the internet radio, you'll get to come through and support what they're doing too.
It's like kind of, it's the DM into the IRL, into the internet radio,
and then hopefully back into real life.
Exactly.
Soon.
Complete that circle.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's eat some pizza.
For sure. Let's eat some pizza, and much respect to sliding in the DMs and getting me here.
Professional connections in the DMs. You heard it. You heard it here on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, and we'll catch you next week.
See you Tuesday at 2 p.m. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.